From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, December 5th, 2025. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to take up a class action lawsuit filed by the ACLU of Maine and half a dozen other groups in defense of birthright citizenship. Kevin Miller reports.
On his first day in office, President Trump issued an executive order ending automatic citizenship for any child born in the U.S. whose parents are undocumented immigrants or who lack permanent status. Courts swiftly blocked Trump's order, however. And on Friday, the nation's highest court announced it would hear oral arguments on a lawsuit filed in June by three legal groups, along with the National ACLU and its state chapters in Maine, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. Molly Curran-Rolls, who is executive director of the ACLU of Maine, says in a statement that the 14th Amendment of the Constitution is clear that babies born in the U.S. are citizens. That interpretation of the 14th Amendment is based on an 1898 Supreme Court ruling. But the Trump administration argues that those protections were only intended for newly freed slaves and their children after the Civil War. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Marcel LaGrange was sentenced yesterday to two life sentences for the killing of a couple in Westbrook in front of their two children, according to the Portland Press-Herald. LaGrange pleaded guilty to killing Brittany Cockrell and Michael Heyer in 2023. He did not know the victims. At a town hall in Bangor yesterday, former Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap said his experience in state government makes him the best candidate to replace Congressman Jared Golden. A former state legislator and currently the state's auditor, Dunlap says he's not afraid to work across the aisle, but will stick to his values when it comes time to vote.
There are times that you just have to take a stand at all hazards, and I've been able to survive that so far, and I'm confident that I can in the future.
Dunlap launched his campaign in October, challenging Golden in the Democratic primary for Maine's 2nd District seat, but Golden announced last month that he will not seek re-election. Former Governor Paul LePage, a Republican, is also running for the seat. This week's winter storm and colder temperatures are a welcome combination for Maine ski operations. This weekend, Lost Valley Ski Area in Auburn is kicking off its earliest opening in the past 30 years, says marketing manager Travis Dow.
We needed cold temperatures and we need snow to make it happen, so we weren't really sure that we were going to be able to make it. It was kind of a tentative date, but we did it.
Dow says skiers and snowboarders should dress for the freezing temperatures with extra layers, hats, and pairs of gloves. Other hills opening this weekend include Saddleback Mountain in Rangeley and Pleasant Mountain in Bridgeton. Sugarloaf in Carabasset Valley and Sunday River in Newry opened before Thanksgiving. Maine pediatricians are condemning a federal decision to no longer recommend giving the hepatitis B vaccine at birth. The CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices today said parents should consult with doctors and those who want to delay should wait until babies are at least 2 months old. Dr. Laura Blaisdell of the Maine chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics says she wants to reassure parents that the hepatitis B vaccine is safe.
The science on hepatitis B has not changed for decades. And so this is just a changing, really fringe agenda.
The Maine Center for Disease Control continues to recommend the three-dose hepatitis B vaccine series starting at birth. The infection is spread through bodily fluids and can lead to liver cancer. According to the U.S. CDC, roughly half of people with the disease don't know they're infected. The city of Portland opened its winter warming shelter for unhoused residents last night due to sub-zero wind chills. The city ran two shuttle buses, bringing about 50 people to the shelter in the Riverton neighborhood. City spokesperson Jessica Grondin says there has been criticism that the warming shelter is too far from downtown Portland.
We were the only entity to put in for this funding this winter, and we did that because we knew no one else was going to. I think we realized it's not the ideal space, but at least there is a space this winter.
The state allocated $400,000 to the city to operate the shelter, one of 12 similar centers around the state to receive funding. In an effort to meet the growing demand for skilled cybersecurity professionals, the University of Southern Maine formally opened its Security Operations Center classroom in Gorham yesterday. Mark Monin, chair of USM's Department of Technology, says cybercrime can affect anyone and is a growing concern for most companies.
Almost every day, there's a new attack, and somebody has to deal with that. And these students, when they graduate, will probably be those professionals dealing with those attacks on a day-to-day basis.
The classroom features extended monitors, wall-to-wall TV screens, and a control room where instructors can launch simulated attacks to which students will have to respond. As the Gulf of Maine warms due to climate change, new species are moving in. Among them is the invasive sea squirt. That's a gelatinous marine creature that has become a major headache for lobstermen and shellfish farmers. But as Molly Enking reports, there may be an opportunity for fishermen to earn some extra cash from these pesky organisms.
Squishy, blobby, and alien-looking, some species of sea squirts, so-called because they squirt water when they're disturbed, have been in Maine for hundreds of years. But other varieties have now begun to find a hospitable habitat in the warming Gulf of Maine. For those who work in aquaculture, these invaders can be a constant source of annoyance and, at times, a major hindrance to doing business.
These are swats.
Oh, yeah.
This is all invasive.
Gosh. Yeah, but they're squirting at us.
Like that right there, that's a sea squirt. This is another one. This one just showed up the last few years. You've never seen this one before either.
Troy Carter is the dock manager at Community Shellfish in Bremen, Maine, where he says invasive sea squirts have gotten out of control in the past 4 or 5 years. Carter says once the traps are underwater, they quickly colonize fishing gear, more than doubling the weight of a 40-pound trap.
But on a lobster trap, they'll be so heavy we can't even break them aboard the boat. They weigh 100 pounds.
And lobsterman Scott Poland says once attached to the gear, sea squirts grow really quickly.
They'll start growing on the trap. They'll be just a little thing. They won't be very big, like a half an inch. And within a week, they're an inch and a half, 2 inches big.
And sea squirts are tenacious. If you simply cut them off gear, they'll grow back. But because they can't withstand high temperatures, most lobstermen and oyster farmers routinely remove their gear from the water and leave it out in the sun to dry for several days. Poland says he keeps 20 to 25 traps out of the water drying at all times, which affects his earnings.
In doing that, you've got your trap out of the water when the lobsters are there and you ain't fishing with it.
Some lobstermen cook their traps in boiling water to remove biofouling organisms like sea squirts. This means submerging each trap in a giant vat of boiling water that's between 160 and 180 degrees. That's a lot of extra work. Other aquaculture operations have changed their methods in response to the growing presence of sea squirts.
At any time, that half that line could be solid squirts.
Evan Young of Blue Hill Mussels says his company was spending 30% of its time removing sea squirts from equipment. Now, instead, he orders lines from the Down East Institute hatchery that already have seeds attached, rather than setting out bare lines to attract wild mussels.
My farm is 100% hatchery seed, and we get our seed from the hatchery at DEI in April, and Mother Nature does not give her seed until July. And so we get a good 3 or 4 month head start.
And Young says he tries to grow more mussels per foot of line, so there's less room for sea squirts to attach themselves. But as fishermen are toiling to free their gear from these pests, Christina Cota is having the opposite problem. She can't get enough sea squirts. Cota is an assistant professor of biology at Colby College in Waterville.
We study the development of these organisms, and specifically the cellular processes that are associated with that development.
Cota says sea squirts are a valuable model organism for scientists. Their embryos are completely transparent, which means researchers can see into them and watch how the cells interact. And genetically, they're closely related to humans.
Intriguingly, as we're starting to see these guys become more and more of a problem, in the Gulf of Maine, researchers are beginning to find them more and more exciting.
Cota buys over 100 sea squirts to be shipped to her lab from California each week, and lately has been hanging pipe off of docks trying to harvest her own.
These are pipes with animals that I collected in Booth Bay.
Oh, these are the Mainers.
These are Maine animals.
But she's hoping Maine fishermen can start to harvest the squirts and sell them to research organizations. It's not clear if there's enough demand to make a real dent in the population, but
it's a lemons out of lemonade situation, right?
The Department of Marine Resources doesn't currently track the growth of invasive sea squirts. But what is known is that the invasive sea squirt is here to stay, and that the shellfish and lobstering industry will have to adapt. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
Next week, Portland's planning board will vote on a proposed 30-story tower envisioned for the city's old port. If approved, the building would be by far the tallest in northern New England. The project's height has sparked some debate and has left some residents wondering whether it will pave the way for more skyscrapers in the Portland skyline. Nicole Ogrisco reports.
I'm standing in a surface parking lot tucked between Portland's old port and some of the taller office buildings in the city. And this is where developers want to build a 30-story tower here in Portland. It's a pretty small lot, and it seems like a relatively small surface. It's hard to believe that a 30-story building might be here one day. The city of Portland says that's by design.
It's important that we maximize our land. So by going vertically, you can achieve the density needs. You can accommodate more people utilizing a smaller footprint of land.
Kevin Kraft is the director of planning and urban development for the city of Portland, which has been studying other peer cities such as Worcester, Massachusetts and New Haven, Connecticut. They allow taller buildings than Portland, which until last year had set a limit of about 250 feet. It's since been increased to 365 feet in some parts of the downtown, and that's the exact height of the proposed tower.
It felt like it was something kind of beckoning the future of Portland.
Shannon Richards, president of the Maine Real Estate and Development Association, says the taller height allowances are a welcome change at a time when construction costs are a challenge for developers. By building higher, she says, they can create more units on a smaller footprint.
And you ideally want to do that in urban communities where you have shared amenities like transportation.
The plans for Old Port Square call for an 88-room hotel, 73 condos, some retail, and a publicly accessible observation area at the very top. It would stand twice as tall as Portland's well-known time and temperature building. And there have been concerns raised about parking and traffic and about the height.
It just feels like a tone-deaf building when it comes to housing, when it comes to look, when it comes to scale.
Portland resident Jason Rubinoff, who grew up here, says the proposed tower seems out of place, like something meant for a much larger city. Downtown Portland, he says, already has its own appeal.
There's not a gigantic shadow in all directions because of these skyscrapers that are up. There's not an urban heat island effect in Portland the same way that there is in Boston or Philly or New York, where it actually gets hotter at night because of the skyscrapers and all of the pavement. We also can see the stars in the city of Portland, and people like that. I like that.
Rubinoff says he agrees Portland needs to urbanize, in part to create a more walkable place for people to live with better public transportation. And he says the city does need to build up, but he doesn't believe the project addresses Portland's pressing need for more affordable housing. And there are some who fear the Old Port Square project could seed a new crop of tall buildings downtown. But planning director Kevin Kraft says there are many factors that will shape Portland's future.
You know, the height isn't what's going to change a city. I think it's going to be part of the continued history of Portland.
Kraft says he believes it's more likely that developers will pursue projects that, while considered tall for Portland, will not rise up to 30 stories. The city's planning board is expected to vote Tuesday night on the Old Port Square project. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.